Welcome to the Ideal Spaces Working Group podcast.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. This is the Ideal Spaces Foundation and Grant Rainham and Ulrich Gebern from the foundation will make a podcast with Caro Gottles, an artist. And Caro, perhaps you can introduce yourself.
Yeah, sure. Well, hello. Great to be here. Thank you for inviting me to your podcast. My name is Caro Gottles. I am based in Baden-Baden, Germany. And I am an artist, a scenic painter, muralist, designer, and musician. And I am in the art industry for over 10 years now as a freelancer. So just a little bit about my background. I am born in Poland and I came to Germany with my family when I was 3 years old. I grew up predominantly in Germany. I spent some time in Atlanta, Georgia. I went to high school there. So I got to experience living in the States in comparison to living in Europe. And after graduation, I went on to study scenic painting in at the Louis Lepois School in Baden-Baden. It was a very classical education in painting and scenography and in all kinds of subjects. I was very lucky to have had an exceptional and very talented teacher and master, Damian Swiderski, who taught me everything he knew about art and all kinds of techniques in painting and design. And yes, I was very fortunate to have had an incredible master. So yeah, shout out to Damian. Thank you very much for everything. So yeah, and I got this classical education in painting, but growing up, I was also very involved in the hip hop and graffiti culture. At the age of 14, 15, I learned how to do graffiti and how to use a spray can. And I would go out with my friends and we would do street art. Well, back then it was not that legal as nowadays, but well, so yeah, that's a little bit about me. As I said, I come from graffiti street art. I had a classical education in scenic painting, and I'm using now both of these worlds in my current art and in my profession as an artist. Yes.
You also spent some time in Los Angeles, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I spent some time in Los Angeles. That was very, that was quite an experience. I had the opportunity to live there and to work there as a scenic painter. I lived there for quite some time. Yeah, and well, LA is a place to be. As an artist to learn, and you know, I absorbed everything I could. So yeah, that that definitely shaped my art for sure.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. These different experiences, what would interest me is the relation between scenography and generating an atmosphere when you make a scenography. We are dealing at Ideal Spaces with kind of scenographies as expressions of worlds. So if we have a painting of a world, and we show in the painting a part of the world, and this relates to convey the feeling of an atmosphere on behalf of the spectator. What could you say about this relation between scenography and atmosphere?
Yeah, so, well, as a scenic painter, I worked on numerous productions in theaters and operas and, on movie sets. And I'm more or less the link between the director and the set designer. So first of all, before everything else, it is important to understand the narrative, right? The vision the director or the designer has in mind. So I think communication is key. You have to be a team player, collaborate with a lighting crew, the sound crew, and everyone else involved to ensure that the scenery aligns with the overall vision of the production. But to come back, to generate atmosphere in scenography, you have to identified the core emotion or feeling you wanted to have. So like every world has a mood, right? So is it chaotic or clean, like oppressive or warm, melancholic or joyful? And for example, a dystopian world might have a cold, oppressive and hostile atmosphere, while a utopian world could be vibrant and harmonious. So yeah, the question is, what does the world look like you want to create, right? The physical features often dictate the emotional atmosphere. So the landscape, the weather, the lighting, I think light plays a huge role in establishing atmosphere, especially in scenography. A world in like a gray and bluish twilight creates a dreamy-like atmosphere, while a bright yellowish sun can create a harsh and intense atmosphere. So the contrast between light and shadow can create tension and mystery, right? And I think the color palette is super important, as well as textures used in scenery and scenography. What does the environment feel like? You know, does it feel comfortable or uncomfortable? You know, rough stones or smooth glass or metallic cold surfaces or a soft natural moss or plants create a feeling. So, and everyone can relate to that. So I think the best atmospheres don't just tell you about a place. They make you feel it. And and the more detail and thought you put into a scenery, the more it develops a character in itself with a story and a personality. So it can feel like a living and breathing world, you know. Yeah, so the goal as a scenic painter is to transport the audience emotionally and psychologically into the world that you want to create. So in making the space itself a narrative element, right? So that's the most important thing in scenography.
Yeah, there are very central aspects.
Yes.
In today's artistic world, what's going on in the world today, how do you see the role of the artist today?
Oh, well, the role of the artist in recent times is super complex. I think the role will likely evolve, but the essential function as a reflection of society and a critical and creative force in the world will remain. I think artists help to make sense of our times. So they are imaging, and they're like they are creating, you know, new images and possibilities and visions. So I think the artist as such is changing, though. But just like our technologies evolve and our culture expands, for example, as a scenic painter, I learned how to paint huge backdrops for plays in theaters, right? We would stand on those super large canvases and paint for weeks on a backdrop just for like one scene in the play. And now it's very rare to have a huge backdrop painted by us, right? Often they use projectors now, or they just print it out like on those gigantic printers they have now. So and of course, because it's cheaper, right? So I think the capitalism has historically shaped the way art is produced and consumed and valued, and it will continue to do so in both positive and negative ways, right? But yeah, the new technologies also have opened up new perspectives for artists, right? Not just the negative side that, you know, my job is kind of taken from printers, but there are new perspectives now I can use as an artist, like through digital platforms. I can reach more audience directly, you know, without having to deal with galleries and publishers or any kind of third parties, right?
So basically, like, you know, I was at one of your shows, and you had a collection of your paintings or of your artwork, let's put it that way. And it was a really interesting collection with colors and images and everything. And in presenting that, I mean, how do you find when you present something like you did, which was like a sort of an art gallery cocktail party type of function, where your art was being sold at the function? How do you find that atmosphere? Is that working for you?
Yes, it does work for me because, first of all, I'm introduced to a lot of people, right, with my art. I'm independent. I don't have to rely on, like I said, third parties to, you know, kind of force me into being something I don't want to be, right? Mm-hmm. And I am more free, but at that point I have like all the rest and all the weight is on me, right? There's no security nor have I secure plan. It's all about me and it's my work and that's the main focus, right?
Yeah, so let's sort of switch this because I know that Uli here wanted to get into graffiti where your beginnings were, because it's a very interesting topic. And so I'll let Uli add a few points that he wanted to sort of bring up relative to graffiti. So let's shift to graffiti for a few moments because a lot of artists started their careers doing graffiti, whether it was in the illegal form or illegal to legal form, whatever it was, but that's now become an art form of its own. So, Uli?
Mm-hmm. Graffiti, can you describe shortly what has been when graffiti started as an art form? What has been the original intention and hope on behalf of the people making graffiti, the graffiti artists, what they wanted to express, what kind of vision?
Yeah, well, I think graffiti emerged as a non-institutional mode of artistic expression. I think graffiti was kind of like a rebellious way from like a young generation, right? And now the young generation became older and graffiti became, I think, an art form that is just respected all over the world. It's I think you see it everywhere now. It's a common form that, like, my generation, I grew up on graffiti, right? So for me, it's just like Dali or, you know, all those old paintings I studied. Graffiti is for me an art form I studied, right? And I was very interested in that kind of art form because it was rebellious and it was unique and it was, for me, accessible as a teenager. I went out, you know, with my spray can and we would do graffitis on trains and on, you know, stuff like that. But it started, I think, as a very rebellious and self-expression kind of art. But now it just became just like with Banksy and you know, he's famous for like all over the world with his graffiti and style and, you know, the street art style. So it became an art form that is now seen in museums, right?
And how this shift can be explained?
The shift
in terms of evolution. The shift from the rebellion to the art form being placed in museums and become part of the, let's say, official culture. Huh?
Yes, I think. The society wanted it, right? It's people are curious. They wanted to be a part of it, maybe, and to have a part of it hanging on their wall. So And you know, the capitalistic society we are all living in just saw, okay, there is an interest in it, so why not make money out of it, right? So I think that's the one part. The other part is it's still very raw, and it has some political background to it, you know, to be anti-establishment and, you know, to kind of protest against something, you know, you are not fine with. So yeah, it's a double sword, I would say.
Related to capitalism, a question, a provocative question, is capitalism engulfing it all as regards art today?
Like in what kind of way? Like the capital
in graffiti, for instance, but also in scenography. What is the role of capitalism in this regards of incorporating art forms? Because you mentioned that there is a positive direction and a negative direction in this capitalist environment related to art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think, you know, art has always been a part of the capitalistic societal, you know, our thing, right? We are, I mean, as an artist, I live out of it, right? So I have to live from art. So, you know, for example, as a freelancer, especially in the art industry, you have to have like multiple revenue streams now, for example. Well, I work, for example, as a scenic painter, right? On productions, then I also have those exhibitions I do, like my own exhibitions with my paintings. And I also work as a designer for a tech startup. And yeah, I do a lot of commission paintings. So, you know, the balance between, you know, selling art and then living out of it, and then, yeah, I think, you know, the tension between the need to sell art to survive and the desire to resist commercialization will always continue to shape the future of artists. There's, you know, the profit-driven art in comparison to the socially conscious or activist-driven art. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so let's put it this way. I guess we're keeping in the commercial vein. AI, the AI has become like sort of a part of the centerfold of life nowadays. It's sort of taken things over to a certain degree.
Yes.
And relative to like art and your art and everything, how do you see it affecting you? And do you think it's positive, negative? And do you think that the AI over time will be better for you? Or will it be something that will take away from your artistic ability and your creativity?
Well, this is like a huge topic, right? AI and, you know, the whole copyright and everything. Mm-hmm. See, one way to view AI-generated art is like as a reflection of our creativity as artists, right? Because AI is fed with already existing styles artists already developed. So yeah, the premise that AI-generated art is a copy of existing art, you know, raises questions about like the essence and value of handmade art, or, you know. But what I think what AI will never be able to do is create art through like genuine lived experience and emotions. That is, I think, essential for an authentic art piece. I think the story of an artist and the development and progress in the artwork is important. The artist's personal perspective and lived reality shapes the artwork. And as well as not only is the finished art piece important, but also the process of creating it, I think, you know, for me especially, I think especially imperfections or mistakes while I'm painting, you know, accidents are super important for me, because that's how I, you know, create my art. Yeah, but you know, I saw incredible AI stuff, right? Like super, you know, generated art that is just mind blowing. But I think, you know, AI technology continues to evolve and produce works that are visually super compelling, but you know, handmade art remains essential. I think the idea behind the art and the authorship of artists and personal and cultural context in which, you know, artwork is created is irreplaceable or cannot be replicated or copied by a machine, I think.
What you would think in this context about the very essence of art as regards the human component compared to AI art, as you said, as a kind of copy, even if this copy is very refined and mind-blowing sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, you know, AI is here to stay, right? It's not gonna go away. We have to deal with it, and it's just gonna be more and more in our daily lives. And you know, I just recently read the quote Pablo Picasso said, "A good artist copy and great artists steal." You know, that was his quote. So yeah, I think as an artist, we have to kind of be able to work with the machine and the AI. It's but just like as far as you know, every artist can go, right?
how can this AI be used as an instrument for the creativity of an artist, of a human artist, having a certain idea and a vision to make this artwork, for instance, in a scenography, to express this kind of world with its atmosphere, its mood, and so on? How this relation can look like?
Well, I think, I mean, I use a lot of tools, right? I use a lot of programs, and sometimes now I really am using like ChatGPT or, you know, Midjourney and all those DALL-E and all this AI stuff. And it's very interesting to kind of, you know, like have a discussion with it, you know. It's sometimes it's very interesting to see like the perspective, and it's very quick. And it's one thing is it's very quick and you have information right away. And it sometimes it shapes a new like perspective you haven't thought about, and it opens up a new like a new way of thinking. Like it's it helps me to see a different world, you know, or because, you know, the AI is like fed with all of the information there is out there, and I have my brain, right? So I'm I see what other brains thought on the whole planet, right? So that's very impressive sometimes, and it directs me to another possibility, you know. So yeah, that's how I see it.
I mean, like art and the public space, you know, like we see art in public spaces. In you know, in past societies, if you even want to go back, let's say, to the Greeks, the Romans, so forth, thousands of years ago, art became a part of everyday life. It became part of their buildings, their architecture, their squares, their living spaces, so, you know, where the public sort of did things. And it was sort of like part of the basis of their visual life. Today, how do you feel today's society looks at that? And are we still incorporating art, do you think, to the level of past societies in our public spaces and, you know, in our vision of every day when we live in big cities, for instance?
Yes, I think in today's public spaces that are shaped by urbanization and commercialization and, you know, digital technology, art has a different dynamic. I mean, while we are surrounded by public art, you know, the function and meaning has changed. So many public spaces today are like privately owned or controlled by commercial interests, right? So like malls and shopping centers dominate urban areas where art like serves more as a decorative function, or, you know, or as it promotes brands. So yeah, in some cases public art functions as a tool for marketing or branding. Yeah, so and sometimes cities themselves become brands, right? Like large scale sculptures or like murals or installations attract tourists and investors, you know. So
you think that there's still a future for the public space and art?
Yes, I think you know, as cities become more like populated and urban spaces become more commercialized, there is an increasing need for art that that lets people think and connect more, I think, that gives them like a feeling of belonging and oneness. Mm-hmm. And yeah, well, I hope I can be that artist.
Right. And
I can make people think and feel something, you know, positive.
Let's say if I was to say to you, Carol, give me a vision of your ideal space using your art. If let's say we're in the middle of a city, we're in a park, or we're in an area where children are playing and everything, and somebody says, how can we make this an ideal space using your art?
Well, first of all, I'm like a muralist, right? So I would paint the walls in colors and, you know, in something positive that people can feel good in it, right? Just like I said, in the scenography and atmosphere, you have to feel the space. And I think because we are living things, not AI,
right,
we are experiencing space. So I would definitely paint it in a like brightful colors, you know, in a feel good mood, in, yeah, just that people feel good there in the space.
Also, like, you know, like in art today, you know, it seems a lot of stuff's become very black, white, sepia tone.
Yes, yes.
You know, I mean, I mean, in your point of view, because I know your art has a lot of color in it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Is color really important, do you think, for the psyche of the human being?
Oh, well, it depends, you know. I think nowadays we need more color because everything became so black and white. And, you know, people are not even wearing color anymore. It's better to have like a gray shirt and gray, you know, everything gray and black.
Right.
Not to you know, to be you know, stand out of the crowd, just to be, you know, silent and grayish. So I think that's very unfortunate, because I mean, we are like spirits, you know, we are living things, we have to like bloom, you know, we have to live life and not just, you know, exist, right? So I think, like my art, I always try to make you feel something, you know, to experience. I also have like very melancholic and very dark paintings, right? Just like how I felt that day or what I wanted to express, you know, in that painting. But I think nowadays in our public spaces, we need more color and more. Yeah, more smile, more good feeling, good time, because, you know, the time is just so dark right now. And yeah.
Okay. I mean, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today. Thank you for all your perspective. And basically, we wish you really great luck with your art and everything. And hopefully we can have another discussion in the near future.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and I enjoyed it very much. Thanks.
Many thanks, Caro, for this really, really interesting and deep going presentation. What is art in your point of view? Many thanks.
Thank you.